Once there was a time when all the elements of earth, sea, and sky lived on the land together in many, many villages.
Many years ago, back in the old country, there lived a holy, sweet couple who loved each other so very much.
A long time ago, in a village somewhere in Tamil Nadu, there lived a monkey.
There was once a man, tall and handsome, who met a woman, beautiful and elegant, and they fell in love with each other.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Ann Harding, and I have some stories for you. This is a podcast to hear traditional stories told by some of the best storytellers in the world. It will take you to long ago and far away, and will bring you back safely. I was simply moving some loose rocks out of the way, a few that had been in the driveway, and I kept kicking them as I got in and out of my car. I picked them up, tossed them over the fence into the lilac bush in the backyard, and as the first one landed, I heard a voice. "What in the name of..." I startled, and I looked over the fence quickly, worried I'd hit something. But the backyard was empty. There wasn't even a cat. I must have hit a cat, though. I mean, I had heard something, and the cat probably ran out of the yard. Yeah, that was it. That was it. So I threw the last two rocks over into that bush, and I'm sure I heard another, "Ow!" But maybe it was something else. In the days that followed, everything that could go wrong absolutely did. I lost my keys and my spare keys. After an hour of searching, I found them in the cupboard in the teacups. How did they get there? The laundry I had hung on the line ended up with muddy spots, like a soaking wet creature had wandered through the yard and shook off next to my white sheets. The weeds grew faster than ever in my garden, and something was stealing the fresh peas right off the vine before I even got to taste them. I was so frustrated. What kind of squirrel can eat that many snap peas? I had a mystery on my hands. Something had changed, and my backyard was against me for some reason. I decided to ask a friend of mine, who was a gardener, for any possible answers to what was going on when she came over for tea the next day. There is a mystery in the first story for this episode told by international storyteller Claire Murphy, but it's a lot bigger than the one that was going on in my garden. I won't tell you the name of the story for fear I give the answer away, but afterwards, I'm delighted to tell you there is a short interview with Claire who will tell us a few of the many favorite books of her childhood and her favorite bit in the story that you are about to hear.
I live in Galway in the West Coast, and Galway is epically beautiful for any of you who've been there. And there are so many stories around Galway. And across Galway Bay is the Burren, this lunar landscape. Incredible. Turns all different colours, purple and blue and brown and pink throughout the day and night. And down in County Clare, I heard this story about a young woman from about 150 years ago or so. And her name was Mary Kate. And Mary Kate had married a labourer, Porrig O'Driscoll. And Porrig was a labourer, so he did, I suppose, similar work to your dad. He would have been digging ditches. He would have been fixing walls. He would have been looking after the livestock, doing anything that was asked of him, really. And Mary Kate's big ambition was to have a lot of children. She wanted to have about 12 running around her. So they got right to work on that. Thank you. And you know what I'm saying. So she got pregnant right away. And with every month, you know, as the belly got bigger, the smile got bigger. And by the time she got to the 9th month, the belly was the first thing you'd meet when you saw Mary Kate. And she had that lovely waddle that pregnant women have, you know. And she was waiting, she was looking forward to that day when the little one would arrive. And she was so excited, she was just in a good mood every single moment. And she looked up and she saw her husband coming through the front door. And Porrig had a face on him like a wet week. And she said, What's the matter with you? And he said, I'm after getting a big job up in Galway. And she says, That's great. Shall we need the money for the baby? He says, yeah, I know. It's great. And she said, What's wrong? Well, I'll be gone, he says, for at least 3 weeks, if not more. And you know, it's gonna arrive. Yeah, but you weren't going to be there to catch it. You're going to be down in the pub. He says, yeah, I know that. But I wanted to be here at least to name it because I know it's going to be a boy. I can feel it in my heart. And if I'm not here to name. And she said, ah, is that all? Sure, I'll wait. I'll wait for as long as it takes till you come back. We'll go to the priest together and name the baby. All right? You're the best, he says. And was gone to the job. And Mary Kate went back to setting the cottage to rights. There was only the two rooms in it, you know, and she was sweeping it up as best as she could, and, you know, getting the teapot over by the fire. And that was when it happened. The pain shot through her body like two long knives being pushed all the way through to her spine. And she just managed to get to the window and she started to wave at her neighbour. And her neighbour saw her face and knew exactly what was happening. So she ran the neighbour to the far side of the village to get the old wise woman. You know, the midwife. The old, old, so old. In fact, no one knew how old she was because you couldn't ever really see her face. She was... And she always had the wee bag of tricks, you know, the herbs and the spices and whatnot. And she started to make her way to Mary Kate's house. I don't have very long, so I won't do the whole walk. But she got there anyway, and Mary Kate had watched her, you know, with the anxious face. She watched the slow walk up to her door, and she flung open the door, and she said, "It started." Yeah, yeah. And the old woman made her way to the fire and reached for the kettle, you know, and put the kettle there over the flames. And Mary Kate said, "No, no, 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 no. It started." "Yeah, you're going to be at it for a while, so I'm going to have a cup of tea." Mary Kate was at it for a while, hour after hour after hour, rolling in the bed, hour after hour of the most God-awful pains. Pains so bad, pains some of you may know about, pains so bad she was sure she was going to die. Until finally, first crack of light in the sky, and she gave birth to a little baby boy. And the old woman, she caught him and she cleaned him and she handed him over to Mary Kate. And Mary Kate was looking at this absolutely perfect being. And she was watching. And the old woman was talking to her, giving her advice, you know, how to clean him, how to feed him, how to wash him, how to bathe him, how to mind him. And Mary Kate wasn't listening because she was falling in love for the second time in her life. So the old woman left. And Mary Kate was there and she watched her son. And then she fed him. And then she burped him. And then he fell asleep. And then she woke him up. And she fed him and she burped him and she watched him sleep. And this went on and on and on and on and on, hour after hour after hour, for 5 days. And after 5 days or so, she thought, "Oh, I better, while he's asleep, just get some fresh water." So she put him into the cradle and headed out, taking the bucket with her. And she started to walk. A relatively short walk down to the well, but with that stiffness in her body, her belly and her thighs, everything hurt. It took her about twice the amount of time. She got to the well. Water had never tasted so good. She wandered back, thinking of the lovely tea she'd make with that water. Got right up to her cottage, right outside, when she heard the most God-awful screeching coming from inside the cottage. So she threw the bucket, ran inside, and the sound was coming from the cradle. So she picked up her baby and immediately started to feed him. "Oh, I'm a terrible mother. I'm a terrible mother. I should never have left him." And her heart's racing, you know. And the baby's feeding away and feeding away and feeding away. And finally, she's no more milk left to give, so she just ever so gently pulls him away. yeah, starts screeching again. So she switches sides, starts feeding him. I don't know. I'm a terrible mother. He's after getting the colic. I don't know what's wrong with him. I shouldn't have left him. But now he's got a huge belly full of milk. She can see his belly's kind of swelling up there. And his breathing's gotten nice and calm. He's probably asleep. So very quietly, just pulls him away. Starts screeching again. But she has nothing left to give him. So she's walking and she's holding him and she's rocking him. And he's screaming in her ear. And I won't expose you to it too much because some of you have heard crying babies, I think. You know the way the sound is like nails on a blackboard? It just enters your eardrum and then it just roller coasters down your spine and your hips start to shake with it and your eyeballs start to go all bloodshot. It was that kind of a scream. So there she was, and every minute was like an hour, and every hour seemed like an eternity. So she's trying to feed him and rock him and screaming in her ear. And finally the sun begins to set and there's a knock at the door. Hello? And on the other side of the door is this old woman, and she says, "Dear creature, God be with you. I'm just a travelling woman passing through, and I thought if you had a warm place for me to sit, I could do a bit of work for you. You know, a bit of sewing or something. If you had a bit of food, it wouldn't go to waste."
Well, I have no work, but you know, you're very welcome to come in and share my fire and share my food."
And the woman was absolutely astounded by her hospitality. So in she came and she went to sit down. And Mary Kate, she had the baby here and she was trying to get the teapot. And the old woman grabbed the teapot and said, "How old is that baby?"
"Oh, he's 5 days old."
And what did you call him?"
"Oh, well, I haven't actually called him anything yet. I'm waiting for my husband to get home and we're going to go to the priest together."
And as the old woman is making the tea, she says, no name on your child. That's a bit strange. And also, you don't look very well, if you don't mind me saying so. When was the last time you had a bit of sleep?"
I think about 6 days ago or so."
"That's not good for you. Put the child in the cradle, go on in there, and I'll sing him to sleep. They tell me I have a lovely voice."
"Well, if you're sure, I'll just be in here if you need me."
"Shool, shool, shoolaroon, shoolan, shoolan, he loves me. When he gets back, he will marry me. My Johnny's gone for a soldier." So the old woman, having succeeded, picked up her cup of tea to enjoy it properly. And that was when she heard a different sound coming from the cradle. And she looked over and she saw a hand coming over the edge of the cradle, followed by another hand. And then the baby pulled himself up onto his feet, looked her in the eye and said, "That was a lovely song. I love a good song, I do. Do you know any more?"
I know lots of songs."
"Well, sing us another one and make it sad."
"Well, I'll sing another song if you lie down and be quiet."
"No problem."
So the baby lay down. He put one foot up on the edge of the cradle. He put the other foot up on the edge of the cradle.
"Right, I'm ready. Start singing."
"Ah, fagin mo carin
it's a Fagin Muckree. She picked up the poker by the fire, stirred it up nice and hot. Care day on Rudshin, Tashin, Selachis. Picked up a big piece of turf, threw it on the fire. Whoosh. Oh, a store in Muckree. Grabbed the baby by the ankle, up into the air, over the fire, and it let out an almighty. Mary Kay heard the scream, came running in, saw her baby hanging over the fire from the old woman's hand, and said, "What are you doing with my child?" "That is not your child. That's a changeling, a fairy baby. Look at it." And Mary Kate looked, and hanging from the old woman's hand, well, it was about the size of a baby. But didn't he have wrinkly, yellowy, grey skin, long, greasy hair? And even hanging upside down, he managed to look at her and give her a wink. That's not your baby, and there's only one way to get rid of a changeling, and that's the fire. And Mary Kate just nodded. And the old woman threw the changeling at the fire. And as soon as his bum touched the hot turf, up the chimney, he was gone. And Mary Kay looked at the empty fireplace and looked at the empty cradle. "But what do I do now?" "You go to the door. If you manage to get rid of one, they have to put something back. Go to the door." And Mary Kay opened up the door. And there on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby boy. And she looked at the old woman, and the old woman looked at her and said, "I think it's time you gave that child a name." Shanae Mushgail, that is my story.
Y'all ready for this?
Born ready, baby.
So what was your favorite story or book as a child?
That is a very difficult question because I don't do well with favorites. So I'm going to name several. I loved Charlotte's Web by E.B. White, but I also loved The Trumpeter Swan, which is by E.B. White. It's as good, but not as famous. I was deeply smitten by A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle, which I just... Oh, little Meg. I also loved Shel Silverstein, A Light in the Attic and Where the Sidewalk Ends, which, you know, growing up in Ireland, that wasn't very common, but I loved how weird those poems were and how dark and strange they were. I absolutely loved it. And when I was a teenager, I was big into Anne McCaffrey, who used to write these dragon books. She's American, but was living in Ireland and writing in Ireland, and Dragon Song was the first one I read. And also, I loved Roald Dahl because my third class teacher, Mrs. Mulligan, used to read us chapters from Danny Champion of the World every week, and it was one of those magical things where it's the whole class is just wondering what is going to happen with those birds and those pellets, and you just hang, you know, you just holding out, waiting to see. So there's probably loads more I'm not thinking of, but Secret Garden was actually a favourite book of my grandmother's that she ended up giving to me, which I then loved as well. And I could keep going.
It's like,
because it's
bookshelf.
Not possible to pick one.
Right. It's an unfair question in some ways.
I think so.
But I think it's good to kind of get a peek at your bookshelves so we know the influence of...
Well, then there's Narnia.
Right.
As well, which I read. And then I started getting into science fiction writers from the 1950s when I was a teen as well. So I read Heinlein and Asimov. And I mean, oh, there's so many.
It's a whole bookshelf, which is great. It gives people a list to start moving down. So we will have just heard you tell The Changeling Child. And what was your favorite part of the story? Or what was your, what do you love about that story that made you want to tell it and record it?
What made me want to tell it and record it? I never really thought about what I was recording. Those were the best stories I gathered from the Jonesborough Festival in 2011. So I wasn't thinking about it going on the CD when I told it. I was just telling it. And what I love about that story is I love the pivot. I love the turning point, which is the moment where the baby stands up and starts talking to the old traveller. I love it because I've watched, you know, hundreds of audiences' faces in that moment, be they adults or kids, and you just see them. Because when you tell it, it's really funny when you tell it to a group of boys, you know, like boys who are 10 or whatever, and they're thinking, this is such a boring story. It's about a pregnant woman. It's about a baby. Like, who is this lady? And then you introduce this demonic changeling. And it's, you just suddenly see these young lads just going, wait, what? Wait, and they all start conferring with each other. And with adults, depending on the country you're in, you know, it can, the response is just, it's such profound shock. And the first time I told it in America, I realized I had to, by watching the audience's faces, I had to make it really explicit what a changeling is.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not human, because there's sort of look of disgust right over the audience's face. It's like, is that what they do to their kids in Ireland? You know? So I think that's my favourite moment. And I just Irish fairy stories are really interesting. They're one of many genres of stories that I tell. But what I love about the Irish fairy stories, apart from the fact that I, you know, grew up listening to stories like that, I love how unpredictable the fairies are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very capricious and they have their own morality. They're not these fairies like Tinkerbell from Peter Pan. They're not these sort of, they're not benevolent beings. They're very mischievous and mm-hmm. and they're not little doll-like creatures. They can be really quite something else. And so I find that quite mysterious and continues to grab my curiosity.
It's almost as they become a creature or a whole, they become another personality that is unpredictable inside of the story.
Yes.
Which is interesting because in America we don't get a lot of that perspective on fairies. We have Tinkerbell, who is occasionally a bit of a snot, but she always makes up for it. And the Irish fairies don't always make up for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that goes back to the, you know, when you look at the source stories, when you look at the origin stories in America, they're all First Nation stories or Native American stories. And there's a lot of tricksters in there. But the people that came over on the boats to America brought stories from Europe. And a lot of those stories do have fairies or tricksters or otherworldly creatures, but they're not really the stories that stuck. You know, in a lot of places, it became family stories. And mm-hmm. you have to try and do good and make it right and be accountable in your family. Whereas otherworldly beings definitely do not. In fact, often their responsibility in the story is to subvert it, is to change the status quo, is to bring about that trickster energy. Of, I'm going to bring about change, whether it's good or bad, I'm just going to bring about change. And I love that.
Well, some of the fairies, I was talking about this with Alton last week after the interview. We were talking about how fairies followed their people over and how they show up in the area. And here in Colorado, we have the Tommyknockers, which are supposedly from the Cornish mining dwarves, gnomes, or these little mining gnomes, and they make themselves known by tapping on the caves, and they'll steal stuff. So anything that disappears around camp, you blame on the Tommyknockers. But they're also good luck. The miners wouldn't go into the caves without feeling like the Tommyknockers had gone ahead of them, and they became this source of they would show them where the gold mine veins were, and it was these little creatures that followed the immigrants over. And it's always fascinating to see how they show up in different countries.
Be bold, but not too bold. Maybe just a little off the top. Bluebeard Barbers will give you the closest shave of your life and make sure you're ready to woo and wow the ladies. Get the freshest look and the latest styles with the finest barbers in the land. Also specializing in wart, mole, and obstinate spouse removal. Come visit Bluebeard Barbers today. It sounds like you threw a rock at the wrong bush. Lou was stirring a little milk in her tea after I told her what had been happening. What do you mean? I mean, you threw a rock into a fairy house. Imagine if your neighbor threw a rock at your house. You would not be so happy about that either. You really believe that? Honey, I once disturbed a fairy house, and I couldn't find my spade for 3 weeks. I finally had my lunch near that bush, and after my apples and cookies disappeared, the spade showed up next to me like it had been there the whole time. I'm extra careful now when I go poking about in bushes. Well, how do you know if it's a fairy bush? They'll let you know. So what do I do about it? Lou gave me instructions, which I wrote down, and after chatting a little more, we said goodbye. That afternoon, I made a small apple cake. I frosted it nicely with white icing. I decorated it with nuts and fruits and put it on a nice china saucer. I poured a little glass of milk and, balancing it and the cake, went out to my garden. I walked carefully over to the lilac bush and, in the shelter of the branches, set those things near the base. I felt a little silly leaving the cake out. For sure the animals would nibble on it, but what if they broke the plate? But if this helped keep my laundry clean, maybe it was worth it. I said out loud to the bush, "I'm really sorry about throwing rocks at your house. I won't do it again. I hope you like the cake and the milk." I turned around and went inside, peeking out the window a few times for the rest of the day, but nothing had touched it by the time night came. The next morning, I peeked out the window again and saw the plate and the cup were gone. Immediately, I was worrying. What if they had gotten broken and the animals wandering through the yard could get hurt? So I put on my robe and slippers, opened my back door, and there, right next to the door, was the plate and the cup, shining like something had washed them clean. But the cup? Well, the cup was full of fresh snap peas. I'm happy to report that since that day, my laundry has stayed clean and the peas have been delicious. The next storyteller I have for you tells stories as delicious as the cake that I baked, and she has been on the podcast before. Lynn Ford tells the story, Foolish.
Mother found a baby, a very small baby, a very strange-looking baby, tiny, 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 with long, wild hair. Now, Mother found the baby when she was working in her garden. She heard a sound underneath the broad leaf of a nearby bush, and when she walked toward it, and the sound grew louder, Mother was afraid. What would make such a sound? Mother lifted up that leaf and there was that baby. It looked like no other child she had ever seen and sounded like no other baby she had ever heard. And Mother had heard a lot of babies. You see, she had a very big family. Well, Mother picked up that baby gently, strange but still a child, and she looked around to see who might have lost a child. There was no one around. And so Mother carried that baby to the shade of a nearby tree. She wrapped the baby in the soft cloth she had used to carry her noonday meal. And as she worked in her garden, all through the day, she kept an eye on that little baby. When no one came to look for the child, Mother picked the child up herself and carried that strange little baby home to her family. Now she showed the baby to some of the sisters and brothers, the ones whose hearts were wise. And they said, "Mother, What a dear, kind woman you are to care for a baby so, different. Father looked at the baby and said, Mother, what a good heart you have to tend to a child that is so, unique. But other sisters and brothers who only thought they were wise, the kind of sisters and brothers we would now call smart Alex, well, they looked at that baby and they said, Ooh, Mother, that is the ugliest baby I have ever seen. Why did you bring that thing home with you? No, 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 don't put it too close to me. Some of that ugly might rub off on me. Mother, that is a horrible looking thing. If you're not going to take it back, if you won't put it back under that bush, the least you could do, Mother, dear, is to cut that ugly hair. But one child looked at this baby in a different way. This was the daughter that had been nicknamed Foolish, because when family had selected places to tend, parts of the field on that farm on which they would work, Foolish had chosen only the sandy path from the door to the road as her land to tend. And her sisters and brothers had thought that was silly. The smart Alex thought she was just downright stupid. Father had tried to advise her that she could plant nothing there. But Foolish chose the sandy path from the door to the road, and she swept it smooth every day. For that selection, she had gained the nickname Foolish, but when Foolish looked at this strange little child with the long, wild hair, she said to her mother, Mother, I feel the wind. I hear it wailing. I feel the earth. It is shaking. Mother, something is wrong. You should take that baby back to the place where you found him. And please, Mother, please, don't cut his hair. Well, Father gave suggestions on what might be done with this little child. The wiser brothers and sisters tried to advise Mother on taking the child back. Those smart alecky sisters and brothers just insisted that Mother should cut the ugly hair. But Foolish said, Mother, no, no, no. I can feel it. I can hear the wind wailing. I can tell the earth, it is now shaking. Mother, please, quickly, take the child back where you found him and don't cut his hair. But Mother's family was beginning to argue, and she wanted to end this disagreement. And so Mother cut that little child's hair. And right then, the wind began to wail, and the earth began to tremble and shake. And down the road that led to Foolish's sandy path came the sound of tiny little feet stomping down that road, getting closer and closer, coming up the sandy path and reaching the door, never knocking, just kicking the door open. And there stood the little people who had walked up the sandy path on their backward feet. And they gathered around Mother, and they looked at her. Then each one pointed to her and said, Where is the baby you have stolen from us? Excuse me, said Mother. Stolen? I have never stolen a thing in my life. But I found a baby abandoned near my garden, lying on the ground underneath a broad leaf. We do not abandon our children, said the little people. We set him there so that he could learn something of the world. That is our way, and if you knew anything about our people, you would know that. Well, I don't know your ways, said Mother. I'm sorry, I don't know your people, but I know that your child is safe. She went into her room, and she brought back that strange little baby. She showed the baby to the little people, who screeched and wailed and called out to her, "What have you done? You have cut his hair. By cutting his hair, you have cut his powers. He will never be what he might have been because of you, and for that you must be punished. Unless, perhaps, you could put his hair back the way you found it." "Put back his hair," said Mother. "I can't put his hair back on. Once it's cut off, it's gone. But the child is fine. The child is safe. There's nothing wrong with him." "You have cut his hair," said one little person, as that little person got closer and closer. "And for that, you will be punished." Well, Father tried to give suggestions on some way things could be settled, and those sisters and brothers who were a little bit wiser tried to explain Mother had done what she thought was right. The smart alecky ones, they just said, "Please, please, please, don't hurt our mother, oh, please," which didn't help at all. Well, Foolish stepped in front of her mother, and she looked at all those little people. She said to the one who was closest, "You can't touch my mother. She did not mean to do anything wrong. She did not understand. This was no crime that she committed. She was trying to help your little child. You cannot punish my mother for committing a crime unless you take care of the crime that you have committed. For you have walked down my sandy path toward the door. You never asked my permission. And you have left your little footprints all over my sand. No, you cannot touch this woman, my mother, until you put my sandy path back the way you found it." Well, little fingers snapped, and in little hands appeared little brooms. And the little people walked out the front door on their backward feet and began to sweep their little footprints from the sand. Whish, 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 whish. When they were done, they turned around to walk back toward the house, but there were more footprints in the sand. And so they began to sweep again. Whish, 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 whish. And when they were done, they turned around to see how well the job had been done, and there were more footprints in the sand. And so they swept again. Still more footprints. And they stepped again. More footprints. They swept and swept, and as they swept, they stepped. And of course, there were always more footprints in the sand. Finally, those little people walked back into the house, and they gathered around Foolish. Their brooms disappeared, and they said to her, "Keep your mother. We will not punish her. We cannot make up for the crime that we ourselves committed. Take your mother. Just give us back our baby." And when the strange little child was safely in one little person's arms, they all walked out of the house on their backward feet, down the sandy stepped-on path, down the road, and then they disappeared. Well, when they were gone, Foolish walked to the door. She looked both ways to make sure no one was watching. She picked up her broom there next to the door. She walked down the sandy path herself. She looked both ways on the road. No, no one was there. And so Foolish swept her sandy path clean, walking backwards from the road to the door. She made all the footprints disappear. And when she was done, her whole family praised her. Her mother and father embraced her. And no one ever called her Foolish again, for she carried her own kind of wisdom, a wisdom we call common sense. And you can find it, too, if you are willing to look for it in many places and many faces.
Thank you for listening to the Story Story Podcast. Show notes, including information about the books that Claire Murphy mentioned in her interview, as well as where you can find the music that has been playing throughout this episode, and more information about the storytellers you heard, can be found at storystorypodcast.com/episode 26. Show the love. Find Claire Murphy and Lynn Ford on Facebook or Twitter. Tell them you heard them on the podcast and now want to hear them tell more stories. In fairy tales, the magic number is 3, so I have 3 things for you to do. 1, like and rate the show on iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. 2, join the mailing list. You will get a link to the podcast delivered to your inbox, plus news and other storytelling-related goodness. 3, consider becoming a supporter. For as little as $4, the cost of a fidget spinner, you help support the podcast and will get access to the full interview with Claire Murphy, where she talks about how she became a storyteller, the list of places she hunts for stories, and the latest story she's working on, which involves shaking things at a demon who is swallowing a river. You will also get a Story Story short, which is what it sounds like, an extra story just for the patrons. The short for this episode is The Three Sillies by Richard Martin. You can find out how to support the podcast and join the mailing list at storystorypodcast.com. And a thank you as big as the tree that sheltered Hansel and Gretel to those who are donating. If you would like to stay connected, you can find me and the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Story Story Podcast or Rachel Ann Harding. Please come say hello, check out the ads for the fairy tale sponsors, and let me know the favorite story you have heard or the favorite stories of your childhood. Who knows? Maybe you'll hear them here soon. Next episode, we meet the fool and wise man from Persia, Nasruddin. And I have gathered 6 or more delightful storytellers who will tell 14 of his stories. It should prove to be an interesting and possibly somewhat silly episode. I hope you'll join me again, and until then, live happily ever after.
The wedding lasted for 7 days. I know. I was there.
I would cross 27 countries, wear out 3 pairs of boots, battle 2 giants, and the grandmother of all witches, Baba Yaga, before I was reunited with my frog princess. But that's a story for another time.
The last thing he said before he died was a curse on anyone who would dare to go sing with the fairies.
Just because a story is strange, do not mistake. It can also be true.